I want to welcome to the show today, Alex Plitsky. Took me a couple times to get that right. He is the marketing leader of Smart PM Technologies, Inc. PM, if it isn't obvious, stands for Project Management, and PMs are the short and the for project management in the construction industry. And he has an extensive background in marketing and entrepreneurship. So we're very happy to have him on the show. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Henry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Smart PM. It's a dynamic business software. I have a background in construction. I used to own a custom home building company. And so I'm very familiar with the delays, which I know is one of the focuses of your company and the organization. How does that, and there's so much new technology coming along with AI, I can just imagine all the benefits that you can get. And I've looked at the website, I can see the benefits that you can get from this software, but I know you can say it better than I can. So please.
So maybe I'll take a few seconds to kind of describe the ecosystem because I've been in this construction tech world for over 10 years now, which is actually dinosaur era for how old construction tech really is. I worked at Procore, which was kind of put construction tech on the map. I worked at Autodesk, and I worked for another AI startup in the construction scheduling world, and now I'm at Smart PM. So ever since I started, there's been we went from a few dozen companies that were kind of solving workflows for construction to now thousands. So there's literally more than 5,000 companies, some large, lots of startups that are, looking at delays, looking at cost overruns, and trying to solve it from their unique angles. And I've been very familiar. I've been following this space for a long time. So I've seen a lot of startups approach problems. And ultimately, about a year ago, I joined this company called Smart PM. Why? Because I thought the way that they were approaching the problems of the industry were very unique. Smart PM's mission is really to fight delay in construction. Delay is the root cause of many issues, right? It's cost overruns, it's strained relationships between owners and contractors and subcontractors. I'm sure you've seen it a ton, right? And I mean, if you look at the messaging, if you browse online, go to a bunch of websites, whether it's, Procore, Autodesk, or thousands of these companies, they're all telling you the same thing. At the end of the day, you're like, oh, we're going to help you fight cost overrun and delays. But they're doing it, most of them, in very, very indirect, very tangential ways. They just think that message is going to stick. And the way Smart PM is doing it is very unique. So the founder, Michael Pink, was a consultant for 20 years. He was literally manually analyzing projects, during the projects or after a project was completed, and trying to understand what was the story. If there was a delay, who's the responsible party for it? Essentially, who's paying for that delay? Who owns that delay? And doing it year after year after year, hours and hours on Excel spreadsheets, Google Sheets, calculations, he realized, well, that this is something that could be in large part automated, right? It's numbers, it's equations, it's algorithms, and there's also a lot of interpretation to this, but he had that secret recipe. He had that interpretation. So he essentially, I want to say, automated himself out of the job. There's still thousand people doing this manually every day, but he basically takes the schedule data set, which we believe is one of the most important, most comprehensive data set in all of construction, right? That's got most of the data that you need to understand the story. So you take that data set, and then we run tons of analytics, tons of calculation. We have AI that's running a lot of calculations that, nobody else has access to. And it's going to identify some of the surface insights. It's going to tell the story, how that project is actually performing. And it's going to do that so that you can do something about it before it's too late, right? So essentially gives visibility to all the different stakeholders, whether or not they're a scheduling expert, because there are very few scheduling experts out there. So we're taking all the insights and making that available to anybody, from the executive to the scheduling expert, the project controls person, the superintendent, field people, project managers, making sure they all understand how their project is actually progressing at a very detailed level or at a 10,000-foot view. And with the hope, again, of being able to do something about it before it's too late and fighting those delays. In a
Terrific.
nutshell.
And so on your, as you said, you work for other construction tech companies. You think that because he did such an in-depth analysis with a study of spreadsheets and scheduling, that he's got one of the best solutions and your company has one of the best solutions out there?
Oh, absolutely. One thing that you may have noticed in this kind of construction tech ecosystem, there are a lot. So first of all, again, we talked about this is pretty new, right? It's a pretty new contact. Nobody was saying contact 10 years ago, right? But construction is one of the largest industries in the world, right? I mean, it employs millions of people throughout the world. And so it's kind of interesting that forever, nobody was really leaning on it. I mean, there was this idea that there wasn't enough money, like venture capital just didn't really care about it, right? It was too fragmented. The workflows were too convoluted, so why even care about it? And then, again, Procore and a couple of other companies put construction tech on the map, and then all of a sudden you've got this huge influx of venture capital money. They're realizing, wow, there's this huge discrepancy between the size of the industry and the amount of money being actually injected in this industry. And the technology spend was abysmal. I mean, these very large companies have very small had very small allocation of their budget to technology. So they sensed this opportunity, rightfully so. And then you kind of had the blood in the water and the sharks. And by sharks, I mean a lot of tech entrepreneurs who just kind of sensed an opportunity, which is not a bad thing, right? But you've got this huge disconnect between the typical, technology crowd coming out of out of San Francisco, out of New York, out of the tech hubs. They know how to write code, they know software, but they were so disconnected from their industry. They don't understand what people are, what the life is every day on a job site or an office. Actually, they just throw everybody together. They think that everybody's just pouring concrete out there, right? A lot of people in construction tech, when you listen to them, you're like, well, you actually don't realize what people in construction do. And so there are a ton, I mean, probably hundreds and hundreds of startups who just don't understand the problem. So they're coming at it with their technology hat on. They're thinking about equations, they're thinking about code, but it's not actually solving the problem. And they're trying to disrupt, and that's not what the industry wants. They don't want disruption. They want to be understood. There are reasons why technology hasn't been fully adopted in the same way as other industries. Finance is so easy. It's zeros and ones and twos. You put that in an Excel spreadsheet. It's super easy to digitize. There's a reason why construction is so much more complicated to digitize. And so you need to have the real people who are solving the problem. They lived in it. They understand. They've been in the office. They've been on the job site. They've felt the pain, and now they're coming up with the solutions that are appropriate. So we are, one of these companies that, we say, build by builders, build by people who have been there and done that and are actually approaching the problem from the right angle. And so, yes, those 20 years
Awesome.
that our founder has, I mean, that's invaluable, right? And that's why he's an authority in the topic. That's why when he speaks, goes on webinars or panels, people listen and they don't change channel because they realize, okay, this guy understands what we're doing. They understand our pain. And that software is actually what I need, not one of those like 2,000 or 3,000 other software that, say they're going to help me with my delays, but we don't understand what it does. It doesn't actually solve the real problem. We spend a lot of money implementing it because we believe them, and now we're abandoning this. It's a failed pilot 3 months later because nobody wants to adopt it because it doesn't actually solve the real pain.
So give me an example. I know when I first started construction out of college, we'd have these management meetings on evenings on Monday evening after work, and everybody went around the table. And if one guy was late in his projects, in his houses, these were houses, a volume builder, he'd have, and he was new, he'd have excuses. Well, this guy didn't show up, that guy didn't show up, the plumber this, plumber that. And then the manager would say, anybody else having problems with the plumber? Nope. Guess what, Charlie? It's on you. What are you doing wrong? Let us help you. So give us some ideas on, and it would be, some block and tackling things that he didn't yet understand exactly how to do it. It wasn't ready is one thing. Plumber shows up, something's not ready, leaves. Two, didn't book far enough ahead, so the plumber's already booked. I mean, I could go through a long list. Those are two simple ones. But give me an idea in the real world to a construction guy and a layman, an example of something that the software would do to actually save time and make the project more efficient, save money. Time is money too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's why we exist, because time is money. So, first of all, we work with projects that are a little bit larger than potentially the example that you were referring to. I mean, typically projects are at least $5 to $10 million in value each, but going all the way to billions of dollars, right? So we're looking at schedules that have hundreds or thousands of, well, probably thousands of activities in there. And it's really complicated to really understand what's happening for each activity. It's really difficult for, I mean, what happens right now, you've got those monthly updates, right? And by the time you do that monthly update, well, a month of work has already gone by, and you're retroactively trying to understand what has happened, but it's too late. You're not really addressing a problem before it happens. So some of the things that we look at, I mean, very simply, what are activities that have started or that should have started, that actually have started, that have finished, that were supposed to finish, or that were supposed to finish that did not finish? How compressed is your job? So for example, if you're starting to get delayed, and now your contractor has to do, or your subs have to do twice as much work as was originally planned to finish on time, is that realistic? If you're pouring 10 cubic yards of concrete per hour, but you were planning on 10 cubic yards of concrete per hour, but you're actually doing 7, but you're like, ah, no problem. The last 3 weeks on the job, we'll just pour 22 per hour. Well, you can put that on the schedule, but our software is actually going to flag that and be like, well, you're really compressing that trade. Is that realistic? Historically, you've been at this rate, this productivity rate. Do you really think you could do three times more? I mean, this is not realistic. This is a red flag. So we have another thing that we do is we look at the quality of the schedule itself. So you've got the schedule file, and what we found, we've actually, well, so we run a ton of schedule, right? We've had hundreds of thousands of schedules in the system. And we run checks against them to see, is that schedule even reliable to begin with? Is it built using best practices or not? And what we find is that 88%, so we did a recent survey that's actually 3 months old. We did a survey, we did an analysis of everything that we had internally, and we realized 88% of the baseline schedule, so the first schedule that you get, are not of good enough quality for you to make decisions off of. So that's an unreliable schedule to begin with. You're not set up for success right off the bat, which means things are going to start to break down more likely than not at some point, right? So maybe there's some logistic, some logical fallacies.
I
Maybe
mean,
there's
I can see exactly what you're saying. We used to have, I mean, a supervisor would be in charge of a neighborhood of maybe 25 to 30 $500,000 houses under construction at once. So, sizable project when you put them all together. And you'd have the experienced guys looking at the schedule to say, I don't think, you're not going to get this, that, or the other. But it really wasn't documented too well anywhere. It was more like the guys are going to go over the schedule with you to see if you've done it accurately. And he may know that this particular trade is smaller than the other trade, so there's going to be fewer guys on the job, which means it's going to take longer. Things like that, which you could automize into the software if we had software, which we didn't back then. So that kind of thing. I mean, I'm
Yeah,
boiling it down to something
absolutely.
that's simple. It sounds simple, but when you have 100 or 1,000 of those things and it can just report right out quickly, man, the time saving. We had these long meetings. They went way into the night. It was like, ugh.
Oh yeah. I mean, people spend hours and hours and hours building simple reports. Nobody wants to actually build a report. I mean, if you go ask people out there, like, did you enjoy building that report, building analysis? Nobody wants to do it. I mean, it's their job, so they do it, but if you have, I mean, if all you have to do is upload your schedule into the system and it creates all the dashboards for you, all the trends, and then in just a few minutes you have a report ready, that's awesome. And then all you have to do is interpret it. But it's simply not realistic, especially as projects get more and more complex. It's not realistic to ask people to do this manually. It's way too time consuming, it's labor intensive, and you don't really want to necessarily rely on someone's intuition and experience, right? The point of the system too is to have a neutral party so that if you have an owner and a contractor looking at it together, it's not, my experience versus your experience, my intuition versus yours. It's just this neutral, data-driven approach. This is the data. Let's talk about it. Let's not fight about it. Let's just look at it. It's a third party. and this is what it is. And it just really changes the relationship and the way that, how these conversations happen between owners and contractors, because you remove that trust layer, right? Like, am I just taking your experience, am I taking your data at face value? Like, should I trust you? Right. And as an owner, you're like, do I push back? Do I say I don't believe them? Am I going to strain my relationship if I start doing that? Am I going to piss them off, one or the other? So it's so much easier to have this data just automatically calculated, neutral third party, and you have a very different conversation from that.
So is it an easy maybe is the wrong word. Is it a one of the things that companies always consider is how quickly is the adoption? How smooth is the adoption? How much time and resources? I imagine that's an important part of the software is how do you get them plugged into it as easily as possible without taking them away from other important things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I mentioned, you've got 5,000, but let's just say thousands of companies right now who are reaching out to also like vastly the same contractors, right? I mean, you're probably familiar with the ENR 400 list, the top 400 largest contractors in the US. Now, guess what? You've got thousands of startups who have access to this list, and those are the best logos you can have. Everybody wants to work with Turner. Everybody wants to work with Bechtel. Everybody wants to work with Swinerton, McCarthy, et cetera. So all these startups are reaching out to the same teams, the heads of innovation, the VPs of operation, and they're saying, hey, we're going to help you fight delays, mitigate risk, make more money, make more profit, and we're easy to adopt. So if you're that VP of operations, if you're that head of innovation, and you're getting 20, 30, 50 emails a day from all these startups promising the same thing, like, you have to be very careful about what you let in, what you pilot, right? Because an implementation failure that took you 3 or 4 months and you find out there's no value, like, that looks bad on you, right? Like, that's not great. People are going to start resenting you. Like, if you're working with project managers to try to get them to implement software on their project, and you're like, look, project manager, this is really going to save your time, help your life, and it doesn't. Well, guess what? The project manager is not going to be super excited the next time you come with another technology to try, right? So it's super that initial impression, that ease of use, that deployment, that is probably one of the top two most important things for software in the construction tech world. So that's something that we are very on top of. I mean, there's a lot of work that happens before the sale even closes, right? But then you really need to break things down, have a timeline, have an agenda, have a like, this is how the deployment is going to happen. These are the people that we expect from you, that we require from you to work with. These are the materials we have. Week one, this is how it's going to go. We're going to, need 2 hours of your time, of this person's time. We're going to train a trainer. We've got, oh, sorry, I got a little echo here. But yes, like, deployment, like, initial implementation is paramount to the success. And if we're not able to have our customers implement and deploy our software very well in the first, 3 to 6 months, we run a very high risk of churn, which is the last thing that we want. So that's very, very important. I've seen a lot of startups fail at that, and ultimately they fail as a business. They just don't have too many chances at that.
So you have a specialty, I guess, and it's really two specialties. It's construction tech and it's marketing. And when you were a kid, were you interested in marketing? Were you interested in construction? Or what led you to being, as you said, a dinosaur, which you're a pretty young guy, but 10 years in a new industry. What led you to that point?
Yeah, so it's funny. None of the above, right? I did not think particularly or want to be in marketing, and construction was something happening around me, but never something that I particularly, focused on. So one thing that's happened is I love building things, but I'm not an engineer. I would consider myself much more of a product guy. Like, I had a startup, after college, and I loved building it, but ultimately I'm not a developer, so that's a challenge. Right. So if you're not a builder of physical things, and if you're not a developer, the next logical thing for me was to, I still want it to be part of something. And so I'm going to market the thing that I'm not building. Maybe I'm hiring people to build something, but then I'm the one marketing. And so that's kind of how I got into marketing, because I'm not a product person. I think if I had coding product competencies, I think I would have liked to be a product person. But so I guess you can call this maybe the plan B. As far as when it comes to construction, I think, as a millennial, kind of growing up in this generation that everything became so digitized, right? And so I remember growing up as a kid before the iPhone, we still had a Nokia 3310 with, Snake on it, which was the one game, and you didn't really use your phone. So you still had a very real, tangible life. Retail was doing well. You went to stores, you didn't buy things online. And so kind of growing up in this generation of everything being slowly but surely digitized, and then working on a computer all day, I was craving more and more to work in the tangible world, in the brick and mortar world, or just I want to work on something that has an impact in the real world. And what has a bigger impact than the construction world, right? Like, I mean, we're working with customers who are building, houses, schools, nuclear power plant, data centers. Okay, I'm not doing it, but at least I'm tangentially associated with it. So I think that's how I got into it. And also because, I mean, we're all going to own an asset at some point, right? You're going to own a house, you're going to own something that has been built, and we're paying the cost for it. And I'm always thinking like, wow, like, I mean, I have contractors who are doing small jobs around the house, and I'm just realizing, well, this is not optimized. And I'm someone who really has, my brain is an optimization brain. I walk around the world and I see things to be optimized constantly. And so I think construction was one of those areas where I thought, wow, there's so much room for improvement, and that could be money in my pocket. Like, why am I spending this much money on a house? Why am I spending this much money on a project? And a lot of that money is wasted cycles. It's admin work. It's double data entry that has a cost, right? I mean, all the permitting, just all these inefficiencies from, pre-construction all the way to closeout, those inefficiencies have a cost. And so I really thought it'd be interesting to try to solve as many little problems, as many little inefficiencies as possible in that realm, because I know that it'll have an outsized impact on the planet, right? Like, everyone in Silicon Valley is saying, oh, I want to change the world. I want to change the world. By doing what? By having a plugin for your email inbox, right? Like, we're actually having an impact on the largest built projects around the world. Like, that's what we're doing. If we can save days or weeks on a highway project or a hotel project or the next bridge, I mean, that's a real impact. Those are, thousands of lives, thousands of people who are going to wait 2 weeks less to get on that bridge. And guess what? It's going to be $2 million cheaper or less money out of your, tax money. So I thought that was a real category, a real industry longing to be helped. It was an underserved industry longing for, interest from the public. Software tools, processes, technology to be improved, and they deserve it.
Similar, I worked an internship during college, government contracts, and there were certainly things about that that were interesting. But then I looked at these home building companies and was like, wow, that just seems a lot more tangible. Like, I'm involved in building someone's house that they're going to move into, and I can, make a difference there. And I mean, work the government does is very important. They certainly probably did contracts for the roads that we're building the houses, right off of, but it was my passion went to something more tangible that can make it. And you're right, it makes a big difference in people's lives. We get their house done by Christmas or the holidays or New Year's or whatever holiday it is, religious holiday it is. If you're planning on getting it done and it's not done in time, it's a small thing in many respects, but it sure makes them happier, and it saves the company money. I notice you have done a lot of different things before that, kind of a investor and different types of that was the intriguing one. You were actually an angel investor for a little while, not too long ago, in construction and management. That was a interesting jaunt to the side. How did that go?
Yes, actually, this company called Offsite, they are also in the software space, focusing on actually prefabrication. So they have, and I'm going to butcher this, so I'm going to not go really into detail, but essentially they have software that helps contractors who have essentially fabrication plants for prefab components to run those, to manage those workflows more smoothly. And I do believe that one of the solutions to a lot of the issues that we have, whether it's housing shortage or costs, prefabrication can solve a lot of that. I'm seeing that as a trend in the industry in general. So you're seeing a lot of, prefabricated kitchens, prefabricated bathrooms that are done completely in factory, so factory controlled, right? There's a lot less waste in the process, right? Because it's a lot more, I mean, you're using manufacturing techniques as opposed to, you think of construction, every project is a prototype, right? It's a one-off prototype. So I think there's a lot of, I mean, I really believe in a future that's a little bit more prefab, a little bit more modular, right? Where you're building several units at spec very well. There's less waste, whether it's in material or in cost. And then those units get shipped in a completed fashion and then installed on site. So I'm seeing a lot of big contractors are doing more and more of that prefab building. And so yeah, so this is something that, again, we have this like Procore alumni, I guess, group of people, and we always exchange ideas, where we see the industry going, if we see interesting opportunities and interesting startups. And so that's kind of how it happened. A few of my colleagues had heard of this opportunity, and we all agreed that, we thought it was very promising. And so that's kind of how we, as a group, jumped into this. And I'm always keeping my eyes on, other opportunities, whether it's in the construction tech ecosystem or other landscapes. But yeah, that's, again, I've got an entrepreneurial past. I would love to go back to it at some point, but always looking in ways to support other entrepreneurs out there when they have a really cool idea.
Well, wrapping it up, you also have some interesting hobbies, traveling 60 countries, I read, and what's it, paragliding? And tell me about, I guess you're in a part of the world, Santa Barbara in California, where we don't have a lot of that in Dallas. They won't let you jump off the high rises.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so actually, paragliding somehow connects to construction tech because I discovered, I knew about paragliding, but the Procore offices are actually some of the coolest offices out there. They're on the bluffs of the Pacific Ocean. And so you'll be in a meeting room and you're overlooking the Pacific. And once in a while, you'd see paragliders kind of, go left and right out the window and, just trying to focus on my work, but then you see wings flying outside. I'm like, this is pretty cool. Like, I'd love to be that person one day, right? Like, not being the person in the office, but actually flying above the ocean outside. And yeah, I found out Santa Barbara actually is one of the best places in the country to paraglide because of it's very uniquely south facing on the coast, right? So you come to Santa Barbara and you just assume, hey, it's west facing, looking at the coast, but it's actually south facing. You've got all these hills and mountains being scorched by the sun, and that's creating some thermal activity, which is ideal for flying paragliders. So, move to Santa Barbara for Procore, discover that sport here, and it's super fun. I mean, so much freedom. You're flying above the ocean, flying in the mountains, like 3, 4, 5, 6,000 feet, spending anywhere between 20 minutes and 5 hours in the sky. Very peaceful. I'm also a pilot, but being a pilot, you have to go to the airport. It's very loud. It smells of gas. You have to do all those pre-checks. Paragliding, you just have a backpack. You can hike up the mountain. You can jump off, and very silent, very peaceful. So yeah, that's yeah. And traveling, obviously, just who doesn't like traveling, right? I think it's super important to build empathy. That's why I like it. Just discovering all these new cultures and finding that we're at the end of the day we're all humans trying to figure out what's best for us around the world, and we displayed it in different ways. So that's maybe not the reason why people travel the most, but that's what interests me the most about traveling.
What a great conclusion. And I want to thank you for coming on. And it's really a pleasure to have Alex Teplinski, marketing leader of a construction technology company called Smart PM Technologies, Inc. So, hey, thanks a lot for coming on. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it. I believe our audience will be really glad to hear what you had to say.
All right, well, thank you so much, Henry, for having me on today.
You bet.
Appreciate it.